couple of cool media types wearing hipster clothes, who anywhere else you might easily mistake for the homeless, with their barely decipherable marketing speak. I glance around the room and survey the dozen other hopeful parents with their array of talented offspring. I wonder how many of them had struggled with infertility too, or how many were divorced or separated, caring for stepchildren or half-brothers and sisters. Families were so complex these days. Against all odds, Andrew and I had finally made it to parenthood. It had taken us 10 years of heartbreaking failure. Finally, we had become the proud parents of two gorgeous boys. Hardly anyone thought surrogacy bizarre or unusual anymore. Not that I'd told many people. At Jamie's school, only a couple of the other mums in his class knew. At that moment, Jamie emerged from the audition room, his face beaming. "How did you get on?" I asked. I'm never allowed into auditions with him, so I had no clue what they'd asked him to do.
"I told them I had a KCF Big Value bucket last night, and it was the best meal I'd ever had."
The other mums laugh at his muddle-up of the name, but inwardly I groan. I'd bought him said meal as research for the KFC audition. I was curious about his reaction, as not one morsel of fast food had ever passed his lips. Not easy to achieve with an 8-year-old. In 2006, KFC had been in the dock because of their use of hydrogenated fats, and after all my time educating him about healthy food, just one taste of the chemical flavour enhancers and tasteless poultry raised with hormones and antibiotics, and he was hooked. Damn it. Visions of Jamie in the future float through my head. I see him lounging around in a shared bedsit with out-of-work actors, a pile of greasy cardboard in the bin, and unwashed dishes in the sink. "Well done. Let's see if you get a recall, darling," I say as I usher him out of the building. If he did get a recall, I'd have to turn it down on principle, and that'd annoy his agent. He was only there for audition practice. The last thing I wanted was for him to land the job. Hopefully, they'd be put off by his name muddling. How on earth could any 8-year-old not know their brand in this day and age? Jamie had started acting the year before, and I know what you're thinking. No, I promise you I'm not a pushy mum. Honest, he is a natural, and it seemed only fair to boost his confidence, encouraging something he was obviously destined for. Friday nights have always been either a magic show with his younger brother Sam, as his trusty assistant, or the pair of them performing a dynamic dancing display or a funny play. He'd already appeared in several TV commercials, some short films, and was about to film a speaking part in Call the Midwife for the BBC. We were also waiting on word for a feature film. Jamie can stand in front of a crowd of people and just talk. About anything at all, with no apparent stage fright. I am in total awe of the ease in which he learns his lines, then mucks about without a care in the world until the word action is uttered. Then he switches to delivering with total conviction, even in a Cockney accent if required. Not easy for a boy brought up in plum-speaking southwest London. I've always been fearful of making a fool of myself in public and had crushing shyness as a teenager. Nowadays, I have a more devil-may-care approach. Defeating terminal cancer makes you feel you can take on most things. But I'm still a bag of nerves if asked to speak about my cancer experience, something that seems to be happening more and more. I'm hoping it gets easier, although it can't possibly be as bad as my grueling experience on Dragon's Den. Perhaps it was good training for the position I find myself in now. I may have to talk at events with a hostile reception. The idea of taking any drugs, no matter how safe, is still abhorrent to many. As we leave the audition, I check my watch. We should make it home for Sam's bedtime cuddle. His younger brother arrived 3.5 years after Jamie, by the same wonderful surrogate, another bundle of total gorgeousness. Sam is super sporty and not at all interested in drama. I don't think I could cope with two actors in the family. The sibling rivalry is intense as it is. We take the bus back home and Jamie tackles his homework on the top deck. We never take the tube unless it's late, as I can't stand the overcrowding and whiffy armpits. As usual, Jamie is not the slightest bit interested in his book. It's during these moments alone with him that he often asks about his birth, particularly when we take the number 14 bus past Chelsea and Westminster Hospital, where he entered our lives like a tidal wave of joy. His questioning has progressed from, "How are babies made?" to slightly more in-depth questions, but they always make for interesting and entertaining eavesdropping.
"When Tabitha gave birth to me, did you take me home straight away?"
I can see the man in front pretending to read, his head turned slightly towards us. I have no issue telling Jamie about how we created him and how amazing his tummy mummy Tabitha is. A pretty young blonde girl opposite catches Jamie's eye and he grins cheekily at her. He's such a flirt. Fortunately, he's grown out of sticking his tongue out at anyone smiling at him. When he was 2 years old, he once went around the entire carriage pointing to each person in turn, saying, "He's got a willy. She hasn't got a willy. He's got a willy." While I blushed furiously and tried to stop him. Mortifying, but very funny. Shyness is a word that doesn't feature in his dictionary.
"Is having a baby painful?" he asks.
He has obviously seen something recently on TV. I'm trying to prepare him for his role in Call the Midwife, so I'm quite relaxed about it. As part of our chat, I discuss how childbirth is different for every woman. I describe how a TENS machine works to make the whole birthing experience easier. The man in front of us has been reading the same page for quite some time. Surrogacy is something I have always been open about with both Jamie and Sam. Jamie loves to hear the story of how he was born, the rush to hospital, how he nearly arrived in this world on the back seat of our car, how we had driven through red lights to get to the hospital from Kent, and what complete and utter joy it was for us when I first got to hold him. Andrew and I had waited so long for that moment. "Hello, Jamie," I'd said, as I cradled him in my arms, looking down into his bright blue eyes, uncannily like my own. He blinked back at me from his scrunched-up little face with a knowing look as if to say, "Ah, I'm in hospital, and you must be my mum. Hi, mum." If I had known then how much he would love drama, I would have realised what he was really saying was, "Ta-da, I will never, ever forget it." What I haven't told Jamie was the finer detail, how the nurses sadly failed to understand our surrogacy. I attended several antenatal classes at the hospital, but was eyed with some suspicion, as I had no bump. With hindsight, it would have been best to attend with Tabitha rather than on my own, but she lived quite some distance away. Logistically, it was difficult. When we had arrived at the hospital, Tabitha was already 10 centimetres dilated, and her contractions were coming in quick succession, so I was more than a bit panicked. We had phoned ahead to tell them it was a surrogacy arrangement and that we were on our way. It turned out the hospital had only seen one surrogacy birth before, and it had been a gay couple. On the assumption we were also gay males with a female surrogate, they had assigned a gay midwife to come to greet us. He was all smiles to begin with, but his attitude immediately changed when he discovered it was a heterosexual arrangement. His disapproval was obvious. Was a gay arrangement perfectly acceptable, but not a woman asking another woman to carry for her? He was so dismissive of our concerns that we asked for another midwife. I'm convinced he then tainted the entire staff room with tales of how dreadful we all were. Tabitha was moved to the delivery suite. They told us that the delivery room was too small for us all and that Andrew would have to wait outside. He looked gutted. "Too crowded," they had said, but neither of us were going to miss the birth of our son. Tabitha and I told them quite clearly that we wanted Andrew to attend. So in we all went, disobeying orders, and there was more than enough room. Jamie then steadfastly refused to come out, but after a bit of persuasion from the obstetrician, there he was. My world changed in an instant. A baby boy. Our boy. My Jamie. I was instantly in love. Tabitha lay there smiling, relieved it was over. The last stage had been exhausting for her. He is just perfect, I said, taking him over to her. How can we ever thank you? I was filled with happiness. Well, he's all yours now, she grinned. I've done the easy bit. Over to you. You have truly been an angel. I kissed her and passed Jamie to Andrew. He had his first proud dad moment. He too was overwhelmed. There was no show of joy or jubilation from the staff. It wasn't how I'd imagined it at all. They had no idea how to react in this situation. Was I stealing a child? Should they be happy for me? Sad for Tabitha? In the end, all I got was a stony silence and frosty stares. I ignored it all. I was in heaven with my little man. The hostile attitude didn't end there. To my dismay, it continued when we got back to the ward. The atmosphere was thick with disapproval and judgment. The staff either glared at me or acted as if I didn't exist. I was snubbed, ignored, talked over, and they were downright rude. Everything I did was criticized. Without the surge of female hormones at birth, how could I possibly know what to do? The hormones taught you everything you needed to know about childcare, right? Of course not. Tabitha was a neonatal maternity nurse. She too was shocked at their attitude. The nurses came over to us both, but instead of speaking to me, they addressed all aspects of the mothering, breastfeeding, nappy changing and bathing to Tabitha, completely ignoring my existence. She politely told them that she was not the mother, and please could they talk to me. It was so unnecessary. They certainly didn't like the fact I refused to wash Jamie straight away. Neither did they approve of me taking off my top and giving him skin-to-skin contact. How dare I? Seeing the bonding I was establishing, one midwife told me curtly, "That child is too cold. He needs to be dressed." Rubbish. The ward was so hot a mother had just fainted with the heat. Everyone was complaining. When I finally dressed him reluctantly in a light romper suit, another midwife remarked, "That child is too warm." Sigh. Because Jamie had taken a while to emerge, he needed to be kept in hospital overnight to check his lungs. "You'll have to go home and leave the birth mother with the baby," the staff nurse told me brusquely. "What? And leave Tabitha to bond with him? How could that be the best decision?" Tabitha was equally confounded. "There is no way I'm going home without my son. I am going to stay right here," I said. "If there are any decisions that need to be made about him, I am going to be here to make them." This did not go down well. The staff refused to let me stay on the ward. There were apparently no beds available for me, although I counted at least 8 free on the ward, and another 5 empty side rooms. How many did they need? I legged it down to the private ward to see if I could take a room for the night, but no, none available there either. I dashed back to the ward and begged them to let me stay. Tabitha said she would go home and I could have her bed, but apparently this was not acceptable. Not hospital policy. There seemed to be no good reason why. I argued, but they failed to see just how important it was for me to remain with Jamie. I explained it would be unfair on Tabitha to have that time with Jamie. It was crucial bonding time between him and me. Unbelievably, they summoned the hospital bed manager to come and have a word with me. This large, overbearing woman told me curtly that there wasn't room for me and I would have to go home. Wow. I couldn't see the hospital filling up with a wave of expectant mothers, so I waited until the nurses changed shift at 7 o'clock that evening and the bed manager had gone home. Cheekily, I just moved myself into a side room, moved Jamie in and said nothing. I wasn't going home, and that was final. They would have to call the police. No one questioned me, so I sat on the bed with my beautiful baby in my arms. Hello,